Interesting. This time I didn't need to ask permission. Oh, because I didn't make you host, I guess that's the reason. I didn't need to ask permission. Okay, so what do we have on plan that was I guess we called it map server entries and delegend. I'm just looking at your document. Yeah, ho hopefully that is not as long as the other session.
Well, do you guys hear me, right?
Yes.
Okay. Before we even get into that, I wanted to show you something real quick. You see my desktop, right? Sublet. So I'm on Terra server net sublet. So this is just the index.html doc, okay? Okay. So, it fails. And so the reason for that is this is the Apache config for that county, okay? In other words, each county, I'm on my server here, and for each county, there's an Apache CONF. And so in that Apache CONF, this is where we set the map file environment variable. And so sublet is county 23. And this is where we set it, the alias to the path. So that's how come this works. Okay. In other words, this does not depend on your document root. We've set an alias there. And then we set some parameters on that. In other words, this whole section sets up the parameters for that directory. But the reason you're getting a failure there is that there's a rewrite rule. And so when we ask for map server map, we have to rewrite that to map server include gwmap.html. And so this has to be in your document root, and it won't conflict with anything. It won't conflict with any of the other stuff you guys got going, but you should copy it or rsync it or whatever from my server to yours. So whatever you set up as your document root, this is my document root here. You need to take this directory, and there's not much in it, but it needs to be copied to, this directory needs to be copied to the document root of your server. And there's no changes you need to make with it. But it has to be web accessible. In other words, the rewrite rule can't rewrite to something on the file system. The rewrite rule rewrites the HTTP dot, path. And so this guy is it's shared across all the counties, and it's actually shared across different apps, where we have the assessor toolkit and everything like that. It's the rewrite mechanism is something I like. In other words, it's something I feel I've done well. The naming convention is another story. It's a shitty name, but what it's doing here in the Apache config is actually pretty cool. It's something that's evolved over a really long time, and it makes it pretty easy to do some updates. Makes it easy to have a dev version. It makes it easy to have an authenticated version, and keep them all in sync pretty well.
Okay, that's nice.
So that's how come you're getting when I go to your site and I click the accept button and it goes to map, it's failing because the rewrite probably is looking for that resource that you don't have, you haven't copied over yet.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
That's a good hint. I would have figured would have taken me much longer to figure this out.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there's a few more things that we need to look at. Probably PHP will need a couple tweaks. But it, we're making progress. Also, as long as we're talking about it, I'll be real quick with it. But the fast CGI thing is not essential on your server, but it's pretty easy to install. It's just an apt-get install, and then probably an A2EN mod. You're familiar with A2ENs?
Oh, that's just for to enable the Apache module.
Yeah, the fast CGI. And then the way you can check that it's, so it's pretty simple in Ubuntu. You just install, you do an apt-get install, and then you enable the module. And then the way you check that it's working is you go to HTOP, or whatever equivalent you use, and you should see, so this on my server, you should make just like one request on yours, and your server will fill the request. And then if you're not running fast CGI, you won't see a map serve process in top. But if you're running fast CGI, as soon as you make one request, you'll continue to see the map serve process sitting there for like 10 minutes, even if you don't make another request.
I just did that and it works. I can see it in when I use top, I can see it.
Good. Okay. So you're all set with that.
I just did the request that you sent me that was working and that shows it.
Okay. So,
It only shows it for 10 seconds, but it does show it. So.
well, it should show up for more than 10, I think.
Not
Whatever.
sure.
Let's not get sidetracked on that. You guys wanted to talk about, Eldon, you had some questions in that Google Doc, and I did try to answer them briefly in that in our break, but don't hesitate to ask more questions. And so we're going
Yeah,
to
and my main interest with those is basically how often is there manual stuff that has to be done as opposed to the scheduled updates.
Yeah, well, as I say, it's pretty much not real often. But it's not predictable, so as soon as I say it's not real often, then I jinx it, and then somebody wants
Yeah,
something.
fair
But
enough.
you're certainly welcome to say, no, I can't do that. A request will often be like, how much would it cost to do this? And that can be hard to answer. You can certainly, I mean, these people, I don't know if, Carson's kept you in the loop with some of the emails, but the reception has been really positive universally. And these people understand, that there's a transition in process, and they're not going to hold it against you if you say, look, we can't really deal with this right now. And I'm going to be around. I mean, I'm committed to making this transition work. So, for sure, if you get a question and you're not, if somebody asks you for something and you really don't know, we can talk about it. And I can say, hey, that'll be pretty easy. Or I can say, that is like, no way. You can't do that for less than $5 million or somewhere in between. And like I say, I've got a good reputation, and people want this product. There's not been a single person that has said, oh yeah, it's time to move to a different, it's time to move to an Esri Arc Online. And so
Yeah.
we have, I feel really positive about where we're at. And so don't sweat it. Some of the requests are easy. Some of them, sometimes the request is just like stupid, or like you can say, sometimes a request will be like, well, actually, we can already do that. Here's how you do it. Or here's a workaround or whatever. So, hard question. I mean, it's a really good question. It's hard for me to answer it with like a simple binary answer, but
Yeah.
I like I said, I'm pretty impressed with how positive all the responses have been.
Okay.
So you guys wanted to talk about what you got listed there as the map files. And I actually would suggest that maybe we look at the JavaScript config stuff first.
Okay. Is that the one you showed briefly last time?
Yeah. The reason I say that is because I think you guys know, like you guys know maps are files. The main thing that you're not going to be as familiar with is the delegend definitions that are in the metadata section.
Yeah, that's true.
But I did create, at least an initial draft documentation of it. Because, like I say, there isn't any other documentation for it. And it would really deserve more than a quick Friday afternoon discussion. Partly because you guys aren't going to have set up. Another thing that you didn't get when you did the rsync, and that's not on my production server, that's only on my dev server, is I think there are two repos that we talked about. Let me switch here. So I don't know if you checked out this repo or if you rsynced it, but it's under RWG and it would be on the production server. The other repo that is not on the production server, so you would have to do an SVN checkout, is, so I have, this is on my dev server, I have a source directory and it has, different junk in it, but the one that has all my source code that I shared with you a few months ago is the all the JavaScript stuff, and it includes the delegend. And so not only do you have to edit the delegend metadata in the map file, but you also have to set some stuff up in your environment, your development environment, to run this PHP command line script that builds all the files. And so my suggestion, other than that, you're going to recognize everything in the map server map files. But what you're not going to recognize is the configuration files. And so I think it would be more beneficial with the time we got to kind of take at least a reasonably high level tour of those.
Okay.
Makes
And
sense.
so did you write this PHP yourself?
No, you mean the map server? I mean the delegend?
The delegend generating file.
No, it was something that Steve Limes and his staff, when he works with DNR, he always has. And he had a guy, shoot, I can't remember the guy's name. He worked for Steve. And so he wrote a really early version of this. And we're talking 20 years ago for sure. And initially it was right in the XML file. And then he ported it to JSON. And then he never, is never in a Git repo or anything like that. And then I don't know if anybody besides me actually uses it, which is sad, but I've edited it a fair bit for my needs. And so yeah, my fingerprints are all over it, but and I've updated it so that it runs with MapScript 8.2. You can even see there, I got the 7.4 and the 6 and the 8 and the 8.2. And I think I even had oh, actually, that's all the new. I had the old legacy map script, and then I converted it to work with the next gen Swig map script. So it's a really nice tool, but it deserves, like I say, a little more. It deserves a separate session. And if so the only time you need it is when a county asks for a new layer or changes to an existing layer. And if that comes up in the next, say, weeks or months, and we haven't got to working on it, then that would be the time that we could use a real live example, and I could, kind of walk through what's going on with it.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think what's really important, we can go back to sublet, which is again a good county because it's complex. And so, like I say, each county then has an htdocs. It's kind of the root of their stuff. And so the map server, it has the index HTML that has the disclaimer. And then it'll have a few files that are specific to the county. And then you can also see it'll have some symlinks to shared code, all PHP stuff. And it will always have an etc directory underneath of it. And the, kind of really the most important thing and most complex thing in here is the config con.js. And that's what I really wanted to kind of look at with you guys, because it's key to everything.
He's configuring the entire map look and layers and stuff.
Yep, exactly.
That's kind of cool because we also have conf.js and
Yeah, well, we've had a lot of the same problems to solve, and it's interesting the ways in which we have come up with the same things and the ways in which they're different.
Yeah, and you're in a really great position to, grab the best of both worlds. So again, this one's got a few more moving parts. The main thing, we'll ignore these first parts of it. The main thing is that there's a an object called RWG init params, and that was just so that there was no naming conflicts. And it gets read and parsed on initialization. So when the JavaScript when the user loads the page, it also loads the JavaScript. May as well take a quick look at one. So it's not bad. There's only 17 requests to get this whole map drawn. And so this is essentially the index, which is actually the rewrite. And then this is the main code, the map or the open layer stuff that I've written. And so you can see it's coming off of S3, and my versioning is date. So this was August 2nd. And I gzip it because I don't think S3 still don't think that it automatically zips them. Then legend is a config that defines this, the layers and the little icons. And then config is the one we're going to look at in some detail. And then legend CSS drills into where did it go? So the this PNG is a sprite that gives you the controls, and this sprite gives you all of the little thumbnail things. In other words, you can see the AZ, 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 and that comes straight out of Map Server. In other words, Map Server has rendered all these little PNGs. And so my script, instead of, whatever there is, a couple dozen little icons for the legend, instead of making a couple dozen requests for each one of those elements, I create a sprite, and the sprite then needs this legend CSS to give the offsets to get the individual elements out of it. Have you guys worked with sprites?
Not as much as I should.
Yeah. I never really with creating them, but with systems like this that use them.
Yeah, well, it's not rocket science, but it drastically reduces, so we loaded this whole thing in 17 requests, including the highway shields, the map serve request, the topo JSON that we looked at, two different, so that ain't bad, and the sprites just definitely helped with that. So anyway, that's the basic stuff that has to get loaded, to get this thing up. And so when the web page loaded I guess the reason I went there is to show you that this is the JavaScript that the first thing it does is once the page is finished loading, it will read this and parse it. In other words, it will read the config. And obviously there's a lot of stuff in here, but the main ones, I'll go through them quickly. This is just the boilerplate that each county has for a disclaimer. So that's easy. Local storage, I'm barely using anymore. Obviously, I'm not using this. So the UTM zone is fairly important because we're showing coordinates in real time. If you can see down at the bottom in the
Yeah.
status bar, I'm showing lat long in both degrees, minutes, seconds, and decimal degrees. And I'm showing UTM. And then when I click on it, I'm also showing the state plane coordinates. So we need the UTM zone, and then we need the state plane zone. And then the map coordinate system would be if some of the counties are going to be in EPSG 3857 Webb Mercator. And so if Webb, like one of the things we do in real time, is we allow the user to calculate an acreage. And you can't calculate an accurate acreage or distance in Web Mercator. And so we have to tell it, it's sort of, I've got a fair bit of logic in there. So that if it's in Web Mercator and there is a state plane coordinate system defined, I will calculate the acreage, the area, and distance in state plane. If there isn't one defined, like this Carolina Precision one that covers, several states in the Southeast US, I'll use UTM. So in addition to coordinate display, the state plane and the UTM zone may be used for some of the calculations for area and distance. So the OL is obviously open layers. And the way my code is, it's web packed. So I don't expose a whole lot of the constructors. It's sort of like JSON, except I hate JSON because you can't put comments in it. And I hate JSON because you can't put functions in it. And so this is sort of JSON-ish. But you can think of it as JSON because it's generally not got code or very little code that gets directly executed. But so instead of like, I don't know how you guys do it, but I've got this object called OL view. And so then is when my app initializes, it's going to go, new open layers view, and then it's going to use these as the parameters. So in other words, I haven't exposed the new constructor or really any of the constructors directly. They're all wrapped in the Webpack compressed thing, and this is just parsed.
Okay, so what is resolution 0.2? That's kind of interesting.
Well, that's because it's state plane.
Okay, and
You guys
so
are pretty you, well, yeah, but that's state plane, and that's also in a county where they they have that 3-inch resolution imagery.
okay, in yeah, so is that basically each time you was loaded it? It's loaded on runtime, so you could change something here in the in the title, and that would show up.
Yep, this whole thing is runtime.
Okay, because like the difference we have is ours is all compiled into the code. If we make changes, it's all in the compiled code.
Right. So the only time I compile is when I am changing like functionality or updating the open layers version or something like that. Just the only thing that gets Webpack compiled is the code that's shared across all 18 counties. And it's that thing that I think I shared the repo with you, but it's the one that has so it's got 73, it's got 70 odd JavaScript ES2 modules.
Yeah, we do have this repo.
Okay. So no, I don't build a separate one for each county. I have this big old config file for each county so that they all share that code.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Only, I mean, just for understanding in general, it's not because of your project, just for my understanding, it's not about your our stuff. It's just in general, or let's say in your project, how do you handle then functions that only three counties have? That's because where do you put those functions that are only for these three counties in that case, for example?
If I want them compiled, then I will build them into the Webpack compiled thing, and only three counties will use them. If I don't want them compiled, like a super short one like this, where I've got a three-line function, I'll declare it here. Another three-line function that's specific to this county that has just enough uniqueness that it's like I don't want it in the compiled. If it's another project, I can show you an example that's completely different deal. This is the Road and Levee asset management system, and my naming is a little funky. Where to go? So there's, 1,600, 1,700 lines of code for a very specific project.
Okay.
So again, it's in that ETC folder. And it has, this is probably the biggest one, but it has, as you can see, dozens,
Function.
many, many dozens of functions that are very specific to this project.
And
Did I
then,
answer it?
okay, yeah. But so do you compile that into the general code, or is that just some
No,
as
no, no. That's, so there's three examples there. So we have the stuff where I really feel it might be shared by a few, and that gets compiled. We have like three liners, they just get stuck in the config. And then if it's a big one, it gets its own, uncompiled JavaScript that gets included with a web request by the browser.
okay, so that extra module is never compiled. So that this one.
No.
Okay, interesting.
I used to, but for halfway decent reasons, I don't bother anymore on those ones. The halfway decent reason is that for the complex ones, there aren't like a whole ton of users.
That's
And
true.
for the ones that are really esoteric like that, there might be two or three people that use it, and they're gonna ca it's gonna be cached on their browser. And so it's like it's more hassle to compile it than it's worth.
That's an
So
interesting approach because we Eldon set up something for our specific functions for different things, and it's interesting to see different solutions to this.
yeah, in some ways mine is more complicated, and that's a downside. But part of it is that all of our code gets compiled. There's no non-compiled portion. So then it became important to be able to selectively include large chunks in what gets compiled for one client versus another.
So do you use module splitting then?
I'm using Parcel with a bunch of scripts that copy things around. So each client has their own subdirectory with the client-specific stuff in it. But I
But
feel
you
like there
do.
are probably less complicated ways I could have done this, but this is what I could figure out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's frustrating because there's so way, many ways of doing it. I guess they call it code splitting, where Webpack, Parcel, Byte, whatever will, like one of the popular ideas is that your node modules don't change as frequently as your code. And so it'll code split it. And so it'll build all your node modules into one thing, and then it'll build all your code into the other thing. And then the idea is that you're updating your code more frequently, so the browser will cache the node module portion of your code. But I've never had particularly good success or been very fond of that approach.
And I think part of it is people get this kind of mania for pushing every update the moment it's developed. And, when we're not doing a release every week or two necessarily.
Right.
Some of our deployments stay static months at a time.
Yeah, there's an unlimited number of ways to do this stuff right now. And mine has certainly evolved over the years, and some of the evolution has been good, some of it maybe not. Anyway, let me try to keep going.
Yeah.
The map file we already talked about, so that defines the map serve map file. And then the map serve defines the version of map server that we're going to run. So it could be, 8.2, and it could be FastCGI or not. And the default image format is kind of a optimized PNG. In other words, for all the vector stuff that's going to get rendered as a raster by a map serve, it's PNG 8G. So it's a PNG, it's 8-bit instead of 24-bit. And the G is my initial Greenwood to distinguish it from the PNG 8 that ships with MapServe. And there's just a few optimizations that I was able to make that make it a little bit smaller. I'm in a rural area, and so bandwidth, bandwidth is getting better, but bandwidth used to be really bad. And I have a lot of mobile users. I have a lot of field appraisers. Field appraisers are people who work, county staff that go out in the field and look at houses and whatnot in really rural areas. I had one guy that was telling me that he was standing on the hood of his truck trying to get a cell signal good enough to get the map server. So I am, you urban guys, you're serving a different client base than me. And so the PNG8 is as compressed as I could get without completely giving up on quality. And I kind of put this in some of the comments that Eldon had asked about the D-Legend doc. If you have an 8-bit image, whether it's an 8-bit TIFF or an 8-bit PNG or an 8-bit GIF, well, GIFs are always only 8-bit, you only get 256 colors. And so map server starts rendering with the bottommost layer. And if you have like dithering, like a shadow underneath of a road, and so the road's red and the background is blue, it'll go ahead and grab a bunch of colors to make that blend, to so it's not jaggy, so that it's smooth. And so then it renders another layer, another layer, another layer. And then finally it gets to the labels, and it's already used up the 256 colors that are available to it. And so it goes, oh wow, he wanted black, and the only closest thing I got is this sort of dark red. And it's very frustrating. And so that's one of the reasons, again, that I like the topo JSON thing, is that I can, do really nice looking rendering in topo JSON of some of these layers, and I don't use a single map serve color yet. And so then if I'm rendering some of the other layers in map serve, I'm not depleting the color palette. The other reason I like some of the client side stuff is with labeling. And labeling in MapServe is about the most expensive process because it does a lot of effort. It puts a lot of effort in trying not to have collisions between labels. And so obviously there's a lot of, geometric computation there. It puts down a bunch of labels, and then it uses a label cache. So it'll go through all the layers that have labels and put them in a cache. And then once it's rendered, once it's built up that image for all those layers, then it goes to all the layers, all the labels that were associated with those layers. And you can hit set the priority on the labeling. And so like it'll go through all the high priority labels. Like if you set a priority of 9, those labels will like be guaranteed to be drawn. And then
Just
If
worked
you've
on
got,
that yesterday.
and then maybe you got somewhere the priority is five, and so they start running into the ones where the priority was nine, and so then it goes, well, it wanted it centered, but I am allowed to try left, right, bottom, whatever. And so it spends a lot of time screwing around trying to figure out if it can draw this label. And maybe it finds a position that doesn't collide with an existing label and it draws it. Maybe it has to give up. But that's computationally expensive. And it's one of the most computationally expensive things that map server does on the server. So if we chuck all those labels, you know, if we've got a county and a data set, a layer that's small enough that we can just send all that data up as GeoJSON or TopoJSON to the browser and let OpenLayers figure it out, then we're offloading that computation. It's not like it's any easier for OpenLayers, but then it's running on somebody else's CPU, right? So it's not running on our server. And by God, the CPUs that these people got on their cell phones are better than my server in the first place. So why not, you know, why not do that? So that's, you know, I may be full of shit on that. You know, I know I'm not full of shit on the computationally expensive labeling, but, you know, regardless, I'm just sharing my philosophy. And, you know, don't put me in a peer-reviewed journal like Greenwich. This is a fact because it may not be a fact, but that's been my approach.
Yeah,
And
but
that's why.
it's always good to know what you were thinking about, because that's often the most frustrating thing with picking up someone else's code.
Yeah, well, that's interesting.
Like,
I have to open the
well,
door. I'm back in a second.
you know, agree or disagree, it helps to know what the rationale was.
Exactly.
And
Yeah.
if I'm just looking at files, I can't usually tell.
Right. Exactly. And again, that's kind of like what I was saying earlier. I've prioritized some of the server side stuff, or I'm sorry, client side stuff where I'm sending up JSON. I've tended to do it more in counties that have more traffic.
Yeah.
And for some of the ones that are tiny that I know just don't have, you know, much traffic in the course of a day, I approach them a little differently. But it is nice because so you get a performance boost and you can get at the end of the thing, you can get a better looking cartographic product. Similarly, you know, more and more I'm using like a third party tile server for the raster backgrounds. But if I'm rendering a raster background with if I have aerial photography and I have some vector layers that get stacked on top of it, and it's going to be one request to MapServe, then I switch from the PNG to a JPEG, which works really good. And that's why there's default image format, which means default if it's not a JPEG, and it's not a JPEG by virtue of it not being a raster background. But again, you can get some really nice cartography because you can, you know, you might be pulling in a JPEG, but if you have these nice TopoJSON layers in the client, then you get the best of both worlds. You get this like really nice, crisp, nice anti-aliased, you know, really good colors. Because the thing is with TopoJSON or GeoJSON or pretty much any OpenLayers rendered thing, you go ahead and get a 24-bit color, or actually 32-bit because you can have opacity. And there's no additional cost, right? Because all you're sending is the data. And then in and we can look at some here. I should just shut up and show you some examples.
I have a couple of questions. Just there was so the PNG HG, is that something you define in a map server output format, or how do I do
Yeah.
that? Okay, so there's some settings you have there, and then the
Yeah.
second one.
It's right here. This is in the map file.
Okay, and then the other one, how can you override the default output when you say when you switch from vector to image,
Yeah.
somehow.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware how you do that, but Doesn't
Yeah,
have the best.
again, this is the config options. And so there's open layers, which are going to be totally client side, and then there's layer options. And so
Oh, you defined us here.
see here I'm setting the image type to be JPEG because all these ones that start with A are aerial photography.
Okay.
And so A23 is 2023, 2022, 2022 infrared, 2020, 2019. And so all of these are aerial photography layers that I'm going to be rendering out a map server. Okay.
Okay.
And so what that says is that if I have a request for the 2023 aerial photography, and it has some vectors laid on top of it, parcel lines most typically, go ahead and create a JPEG. I mean, not even just go ahead, but do a JPEG. But if I have not explicitly said in the layer definition to use some other image type, then default to this 8-bit optimized PNG.
Okay, got it.
This one's got a bunch of complex stuff, and if I drill down on some of the esoteric stuff in it, we're gonna run out of time. So I want to kind of just touch on the big ones. So you know how OpenLayers has the concept of sources, and it has the concept of styles, and it has the concept of layers. And so that's what these three, these are all for client-side browser open layers rendered stuff. The sources, styles, and OL layers. The layer options are both for server-side and client-side rendered stuff. So the sources are, like in open layers, when you go source, or like you go new source, then there's the options that go with it. So this will be parsed by the app, and for each one of these, it'll go, open layers, new source, street no, and then it'll take the parameters and it'll feed into the options here. So in other words, this syntax is exactly the option property of the new declaration in open layers. Am I saying that? Like, you got that? Okay. This one's a little more complex because it has a callback. This one's kind of cool. In most cases, the option object is just going to be the URL. This one's cool. I have a loaded function. And so what it's going to do is the topo JSON will include a style for each one. And so I do style caching. In other words, rather than every time you draw a feature in open layers, there's a million ways to style them in open layers. And one of the lazy ways of doing it is, do new style each time. And so you're creating a new style object every time the user pans or zooms. So it's better to cache them. And so that's what these are statically cached styles, but the load function here allows me to also dynamically cache styles. Don't sweat. I know that probably Doesn't sound like, I'm sure that's clear as mud, but
I have a little bit of idea because I did a drawing function in OpenLayers, and then I needed to keep track of the IDs and then create a style. And then I ran into some issues creating a new style, and then I got into this cache style thing. So I've worked a little bit with that.
cool. Okay. This is the more typical way I do it, the loaded function I don't use too often. So again, we have the config options, and so we have a styles object, and then each style, these are just the option parameters that get passed into OpenLayers. And so again, this shit should look really familiar. In other words, it's exactly the OpenLayers syntax, just that you're not burying it in the new style object. You're just creating the option that will get passed into the new style object. And then OpenLayers, same deal. These are the parameters. So this is probably a pretty good example. So we'll, for each of these layers in the open layer, in this case, it's an array, which is important because it's got to be ordered. These guys are just objects. So this is a layer group, an open layers group. And so it has a layer array in it. And so the source has already been declared up here in the source, the type, da da. This is a static style, not a great example. Yeah, let's skip this one. I have not taken a liking to the new, to Tim Schaub's new style literal declarations, but don't tell him I said that.
I haven't looked at that, and I might have mentioned he was a former colleague of mine.
That's why I told you not to tell him I said
Yeah, I haven't seen him for a while. He's not around here in Montana, so.
Well, he's not that far away from me, but he's pretty reclusive.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to get a yeah, he's a kind of a universal genius in a way. Yeah, he does all kinds of things, but he's pretty, yeah, he does his own thing, let's say
Yeah,
so.
he does his own thing. So, okay, so this is a really good example of a fairly complex style. So we're in the layer object, okay? And so we give the layer a name, we tell it it's a vector, and we tell it what the source is. The source has already been declared and loaded up here, or it will be loaded when the user turns this on. And so we got a style, and it's a function. And so the style function in OpenLayers takes the feature and it takes the resolution. And so if the resolution is greater than 100, and again, we're dealing with state plane feet. So in my, you can see I'm saying that that's approximately 1 to 150 thou return. In other words, this is a label layer. So don't even try to label stuff when the user zoomed out beyond 115K. And so we bail really quick. In other words, if we're not going to do anything, I don't want to have it do any more. I don't want to have it cut through any more lines of code than necessary. So that's the early bailout. So we get the feature from the source, and we're getting the A. And JSON is really verbose, which I maybe I shouldn't care so much about. But when you got key value pairs, and you've got hundreds or thousands of them, the name of the key is repeated 100 or 1,000 times. And so I tend to use fairly terse key names. And so I'm just saying here that I'm going to go get feature A, and A is actually the street address. Okay, so like if I wanted a verbose key pair, it would be like get feature street address, but street address might occur in my JSON 20,000 times, and that just fattens it up compared with A. Okay, so if A, in other words, if it actually has a label, then I've got this function. And so I use this RWG as a namespace, and I'm pretty sloppy with it, but I put more stuff in this one namespace than I should. But it is what it is. So there's a styles object in it, and it has a method called get. And so it gets street name. And so street name is, did I say street name or street nums? I'm sorry. So street num is a cached style. In other words, we've already declared it as a static cached style. So that's what this function is doing. We're going to, get a cached style. The only problem is that we got to actually give it, I mean, the street num style, it's got a font size, it's got some attributes, it's got a color, it's got, an offset, it's got all that great stuff. The problem is we have to assign the street number to it. In other words, each label is going to be different, right? And so this function that I've got, that's part of my shared code, takes a parameter and, oh, I'm sorry, it doesn't take a parameter in this, this is a slightly older version of it. Never mind. There's a couple ways that we can do it. So I could have put the parameter in here as an object, or what I've done is I got the style and then I set the text of the style to be the street address, and then I return the style. Did I explain that in any meaningful way, or was that all like garbage?
No,
I think that made sense.
I think I kind of got it most part, at least.
Okay. So in other words, for the open layers, for the OL layers, they're exclusively rendered in the browser, and they have just the properties defined, and those properties get passed into open layers. And so it's got to have a source, which we've already defined in the sources, and it's going to have a style, which we can have already declared. And then we can modify that style as necessary. In this case, we're adding the street number to it.
That sounds good. I just have a practical question. I didn't poke around the maps too much yet, or well, in the future, definitely. But one question I had is, when you switch on and off a layer, if it's open, if it's a map server layer, do you ever request these layers as a run request, or do you always have individual requests for those? I mean, in terms of, because if you requested them together, there would be, the label detection. And if you don't, then there wouldn't. So just a question, because that's something, I was thinking about in our application sometimes.
I'm not sure I follow your question, Karsten. Are you saying if I'm making a request to map server with multiple layers?
Yeah, so if you go to your interface in your map here in the layer switcher, and then obviously you can switch on and off one layer, And the way it can be done is you switch on roads, and in your case, it might be TopoJSON, but let's say everything was map server, and
Right.
switch on the roads, and then bang, it does request the roads layer. But you also have the land use and the buildings and whatever layer. So basically, there's two ways you could, in a layer switcher, you could just have a request that requests all three layers that are visible in one request, or you could have three individual requests. And in terms of if you had individual requests, you don't have the layer a label conflict detection. It's just that was what I was getting at.
Right. So if you look at this request that I just highlighted,
Okay, so you're having three here.
right. So I've got a lot of logic built into this layer control, and again, that's why I've modified it over the years. So if it's a server side request, in other words, a map server request, it will pack all the layers into a single request. So you can see it's a WMS request that's asking for public lands, which is the filled polygons, water, which you can't see too well here, but it's this is a big reservoir, the blue,
Yeah.
and there's a river here, and the ownership, which is the parcel lines. And then the roads are drawn with TopoJSON. So if it's a map server, in other words, server-side rendered request, then it will make a single request with a few exceptions. I do have a mechanism by which you can split them out if you wish. In other words, you can split the background raster request out. If it's a So, again, look at my network tab here. And if I just turn off the road layer, there's no new request whatsoever because it was
That's
TopoJSON.
TopoJSON, right?
And if I turn on the FEMA floodplain, so I now, and don't blame me, I did not pick these colors. It was, there are times when I just go, holy shit, what are you guys talking about? So now you can see that there is just one map server request. It now has four layers, and you can preview it and see those bright ugly colors. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
And it's
Is there a setting? Where is the setting if you want to pool them or not, kind of?
again, all that's going to be in here.
Oh, it's in there. Okay.
So, we've got the OL layers. I can't think of a good example to show you really quick, and I don't want to waste too much time with it. But so we looked at the sources, the styles, and the OL layers. OL being the ones that are rendered totally on the browser, client side. So then the next big option, the next big group is layer options. And so I already showed you the image type thing. In here, I don't see one. I've got a whole bunch of things of
Option.
keys, yeah, key value pairs that can go with a layer. And one of them is called OL layer. And so, if I don't, so there's a bunch of defaults, right? So we don't have to declare stuff that that we use 90% of the time. Yeah, we've got really nice defaults for it. But one, let's say on this Aerial Photography 2023, I've said that I want it to be JPEG, but let's say I want it to be a separate map server request, or maybe I want it. Whatever. Then what I would put in here would be well, That's actually the name I've used. So I would have declared an open layers layer. The source would have been map server. The type would have been raster. I'm sorry, the type would have been probably like WMS or something like that. And so in the layer options, if I don't tell it what OL layer it goes on, it automatically goes on the default map server layer. But if I do have a reason that I want it to be, on a separate map server request, that would be how I would do it. So let's go through some of these guys. Obviously, image type is a big one. Info is pretty important. And so that declares a function that will get called if the user clicks on that.
Is that the get feature info request?
We may as well look at one of the main ones that we've got here. I'm just trying to pick one that might be reasonably actually let's not pick the worst case scenario. So let me switch counties so you can see it. So these are the wellheads. We were looking at them on Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
And here's so.
Yeah, that's just couldn't help it. This saying in the middle looks like the Milky Way concentration of wellheads. When you zoom out, you see like this following a valley or depression or whatever that is, or geologic depression.
I was thinking it's kind of funny how much geology you can see in just this layer.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. I got the topo background on. It's not too good, but
So the identify is this info option that you
yeah.
showed.
So looking at the config first. It's a default map server layer. In other words, it's rendered by the server. And it doesn't have an image type because it's going to be a PNG. And, so there's various properties that are going to just default. Maybe I can show you that a little bit better.
Well, one thing is what I'm wondering when you're showing this with, the things that are returned from that, are you then actually creating the template dynamically or, the map server template, or you're not using that?
No, I'm not. I've got something a little better going than that.
Okay, interesting.
I'll show it to you.
Because I mean, kind of organizing and creating templates for many layers is kind of a nuisance in Map Server.
Well, you may not think the way I'm doing is any easier.
I don't know. We'll see. I'm just collecting some ideas that could also help us with our other projects. So that's interesting always.
Yeah, well, take the good stuff, not the shitty. Okay, fine. So again, my namespace is RWG. Then it has a layers object, and one of the functions that I've defined in it is get layer by name. And so I'm going to get wellheads. And so these are some of the properties. So it's got a name, It's got the image type. Again, I didn't have to declare it. That's the default. The open layers, the default, the state is true or false, on or off. And is it an exclusive group? I think, guess Q just uses that. In other words, is it a layer that can only be on exclusively, or can it be on with others? So you can see this is a function I was able to call and get that layer. And so the info, let's switch back then. So the info is an object on is a key value on that object. And the value is a function. And the function, again, my namespace and then format info. And so it takes three parameters. One is the actual data itself. And then these are the labels that will be shown. And then this is the heading. Now that doesn't make sense, but watch what happens when I click on it. So here's that heading, okay? And obviously the data is what's being filled out here, but the light gray, so an array was sent up. I got however many wellheads that is, a whole bunch of them, you know, because I had a search radius on a cluster of wells. And so we can look at what came back. So I had a wellheads layer, have ownership layer, and I have a zoning layer. And the wellheads layer has 11, 12 records in it. And so this is the data. So probably.
So you're just filling it in by its position, how it's returned to the correct heading.
Yep.
Okay.
So the data that's come back is just the data, not it's an array of values as opposed to a key value pair. And so you can see on this one, it corresponds to this. You know, you can see the API number. The class is a gas well, Ultra Petroleum. And so coming back to the config, these headings are the labels that are displayed in the light gray here. So it just iterates through this array of arrays, and that's what this format info does. So now it takes three parameters. It takes the actual data, and this is essentially the template. So you were saying that managing map server templates is a pain. And like I said, mine's not necessarily going to be any easier. But
Well,
that's.
we need to invent another one. And just have that leaves me with one question, because here you have the titles. So where is it configured, which source data you're getting in that PHP?
So again, we're in the ETC directory of this county. And we're using PHP to make the request, right? So these are all the layers in that county that can return info. And it's interesting, we're looking at wellheads.
So it has its own PHP, okay.
Yeah, wonder why I'm doing that. It's obviously code that's shared across all the counties, so I don't want to have to recreate it. But an easier one to look at would be, for example, this one where it's in line. So if the layer's request includes precincts, then we create our SQL query. And so the where clause, will always include the user's click. In other words, it'll include all the spatial query stuff. And the user may have clicked a point or drag a box, and the data may be a point or a line or a polygon object. And so there's shared code that takes care of all that stuff. In other words, it's made for a info query, map click kind of thing. So the shared code constructs the where clause, puts it into a variable called where. And so all I got to do is select the precinct, the legislative district. I have a null in here for probably something that they don't have. The polling place, precinct name from the precincts table, the precincts 2022 table, where, and that would include, the spatial part. And
Okay.
then this is the ADODB. It just runs that and returns a record set. And so I look at the connection and see if there's an error. And if there's not an error, it fails quite quietly, which is kind of nice because there could be several layers that had info. And if one of them fails, I don't want to bring the whole ship down. And so then we check how many rows there were. And if we, this is an error. This is like just they clicked and there wasn't anything. If there actually were rows, then I, somewhere here, am creating the JSON array. Oh, I know what I'm doing here.
But basically, you're not using map server get feature info requests. You're just having your own database query here with spatial.
Totally, totally. I use the map server get feature early on, and I also use the WMS get feature info. And I think they've gotten better, but in both cases, I found them to be a little restrictive. I don't think in either of them, it's very easy to pass up a function.
Well, you can put a function in the template that runs whatever you want, but it's a little bit weird to do it this way. So.
Well, yeah, and then the problem is you can stick the function in the template, but then you gotta have client-side code that actually calls the function when the data is returned. Because that's what I'm doing with this render info. Or format info is this. I forget all the specifics, so I may be speaking a little bit. It's been years since I did it, but I kept running into various limitations, and some of which may be gone by now. But that, yeah, you can stick a function in a map serve template, but you've got to have a way to then execute that function when the request has been fulfilled and returned to the browser. I found that difficult. I know with the WMS get feature info back in the day, and again, this may have changed, you could only get a single. Forget what it was. You could only get a single result back, or you couldn't drag a box or something.
Oh
And
yeah, there is a setting now for multiple returns. I don't know how long that was around, but yeah, it has this, but go ahead. I think this is pretty clear now. You define what's returned in the PHP for each layer, and
right. So the request doesn't touch map server. In
yeah.
other words, when the user clicks, it makes a back-end request to PHP. PHP connects to Postgres. And then you have the full power of Postgres. You're not farting around with trying to convince Map Server to format the Postgres request the way you want it to. You can do is complex a query as you wish, in against Postgres, PostGIS, and then you return the raw data values. And then when it comes back, this format info function automatically will get called. And so it can then in turn have functions of its own to trying to find one that might have a nicer example.
To kind of style or configure your output, how that looks.
Yeah, so this one's going to build a link. So you can see here it's the format info function again. Here's the data, here's the array. And so it then in turn calls another function that returns a full URL based on the data. In other words, this is a USGS gauging station for water level. Let me see if I can find one. I don't know if I'll. Oh no, I'm sorry. I'll waste too much time. This is for a specific project that I'm not logged into right now. But you can see there's a boatload of functionality here that, yeah, I've rolled my own code for it, but I've also not been restricted by OGC WMS limitations or map server template limitations. And, if you look at it and go, man, we don't need to do it this way anymore, then great. It's not like you're locked out of using any of the WMS or map server get feature requests. Okay, that's a pretty high level view of the config, but I think it touches the main things is that you've got a few basic things that you got to declare in terms of projections, the map file, the map server version, and then you've got three objects here for your server side, I mean your client side stuff, sources, styles, and the layer definitions. And then you have all your layer options, which cover pretty much pretty wide variety of stuff. Maybe it's the image format for raster layers, maybe it's the info function for queryable layers. And then some of this other stuff is no big deal. This just this takes these are the
Navigation
bounding
or
box for
zoom.
yeah, so I can jump to Cora.
Okay.
And some stuff with disclaimers. I have this concept of selection sets that caches some of these definitions that are used frequently. In other words, this is the same thing you saw before, but so these are labels, and then these are the functions that highlight. So in other words, if I I was telling you that I would when I've clicked, I get the attribute info, but I also got two spatial objects back, a point and a polygon.
Oh yeah, I think you mentioned that.
Right? The point is the label, 642, and then the polygon is the gold highlight. And so these functions take care of that. And then again, these are just a whole bunch of labels that'll go on to there. And then the info layers is sort of some, I think the comments are pretty good on this. These are kind of helpers where the layer op where I need to share stuff across multiple layers. Then init code allows us to daisy chain some additional initialization onto the like I say, the when the project loads, it's going to parse this file, and it's going to recognize all the objects that are in there. But if you've got a special case where you've got some additional stuff that needs to be initialized on page load, you can put functions in here. And after that, the main stuff is parsed and the RWG object is created, then you can daisy chain some additional stuff onto it. This one doesn't have any.
Okay. Well, sounds good. I think your saturation is pretty much fulfilled for the day.
Sure.
But that is great. Think we let you go and have a good 3 days initially, and then I'll probably send you an email if there's some question I have, and otherwise we plan for, I guess, Thursday for another session about the, what was that, the treasures and then the egg map thing, and kind of a little to prime me a little bit for what's coming up the
Right.
week after.
Yeah, for sure. Send me emails. Don't bang your head against the wall trying to get some of that stuff set up, because I can usually spot some of those little problems.
Yeah, probably a lot of things are just for you much faster than figuring
Sure.
out.
Sure. I mean, I'll have limited time to
That's fair.
answer, but I'm sure some of them I can just look at, like that sublet thing, and go.